Hey, America, this is JesseCooper.com coming to you to discuss Juneteenth. That's right, Juneteenth, not just as a date, but a holiday. That's right, more than just the weekend, more than just the day itself, what it represents in Texas. For me, my heartfelt stories, personal stories, I want to share with you from a man who was a mentor, a friend, sometimes a stand-in father figure even, and also a hell of a tennis player, I'll add. His name is the amazing, the great, the honorable, and the late State Representative Al Edwards. I'm going to share much more about Al, my stories, and how this Juneteenth holiday is connected to tennis. That's right, the sport of tennis. Mostly because Al loved tennis and he was a facilitator and able to bring so many people together. So that's my intro. I'm excited to do this. Let the beat play. All right, so first, Juneteenth as a holiday. We all understand Juneteenth. We get that part. Okay, so much information is already out about that. We understand it. Okay, but in Texas, there's a man who's responsible for really bringing this together, who we need to be thankful for. And recently, he passed away. I want to say recently, a friend passed away. Okay, who's that guy? Well, I said his name in the intro. I'm going to say it one more time. It's State Representative Al Edwards. Okay. I call him Al. Okay. Just Al. I don't call him Al Edwards, Honorable this, all that kind of stuff. A lot of people do that, but I call him Al. And I call him Al because he was like big uncle. He was stand-in father. He was a friend. He was all those different things. But let me finalize the part of the Juneteenth piece with Al Edwards. Then I'll get into some colorful stories with you that I want to share, and I can't wait to share that. Okay, first, Al Edwards, if you check history, you'll know that in 1979, okay, that's right, I was born near that time, by the way, but in 1979, Al sponsored and authored the bill making Juneteenth, that's June 19th, a state paid holiday. That's right, a state paid holiday in Texas, of course, in Texas. He was a state representative, and this happened in Galveston, actually. It happened in Galveston, Texas. One of the things you'll find in Galveston, Texas is a unique, cool, awesome looking statue of Al Edwards. And while y'all out there tearing down statues, you should be running around trying to take his statue and set it up on top of the highest peak so that everyone can see it. So it is truly something to marvel about and sing some praises on. Okay, so I want to share that part with you. But you know, Al, from a civil right, as a civil rights leader back in the days with the civil rights movement, of course he did the marching, he did all the, you know, the rallies and the demonstrations. But I want to say he did peaceful marching, peaceful demonstrating, okay? Back with Dr. King, that's Dr. Martin Luther King, for those who don't get it, and of course the Reverend Jesse Jackson, and many others I could add, but I don't need to do that right now. Back to Juneteenth, okay? That's just a little bit of Al Edwards, of who this man is. Let me add, he became a state representative in 1978. Okay, that's 1978, and you heard it correctly, in 1979. That's a very short turnaround time. As a freshman, okay, state representative, he was able to get this deal done, and he went in, and brother, let me tell you, he was willing and dealing. There are stories that he would tell me how he got it done, which is why with everything going on in this country today, some of y'all need to take a chill pill and learn to be tolerant and work with everyone. Because I said 1978 he started, and 1979 the bill was passed. So this means he had to work with friends and foes alike. And you know, in those days, we ain't gonna go into that just yet, but they gave cause for a whole lot of rattling and rocking the cage. But you know, politics is politics, and sometimes you have to be willing to get in bed and have conversation with people that you disagree with. That's just part of life, you know. Al was, you know, kind of low-key a reverend as well. He was real huge in the community gave a lot of advice, a lot of wisdom, that kind of thing. It wasn't just a civil rights protester and advocate and so on. He was an individual that you could approach on the street. You could go and, you know, tap his line anytime and just call him up and say, hey, here's my deal. I have a problem. And he'd give you advice. He'd give advice like a big brother would. He'd also give advice like a father would. And I respected that. It humanized him. It made him both reachable, but also the guy who was willing to teach. You know, if you were teachable, he was willing to teach you and teach you a couple things. Okay. Anyway, today they call them life coaches. Anyway, now Al Edwards, State Representative Al Edwards, he founded the Juneteenth USA. Okay. Juneteenth USA. And I say Juneteenth USA as an organization because as a tennis player, you know, coming up and I wanted to play these tournaments, I participated in a tennis tournament and it was named the Juneteenth USA Classic. Okay. Juneteenth Classic. And he would, on the entry fees, it would be checks payable to, at that time, people were actually writing checks, and you would pay checks to Juneteenth USA. So never dawned on me that what this was. You know, some of the old heads around would explain some stuff. Eventually, Al started, you know, as he took me under his wing, he would explain, you know, things to me and give me the background, the stories of what it was like and things that he would do back in the day and how all of that would tie into tennis. Okay, so let me just slow down for a little bit. If you guys have just a second, I won't be too long on this podcast, but I want to share a story or two with you, and then I want to give you a brief tie-in. Because I don't want to be long, I won't go into, you know, too much details, but I'm going to hit some high points for you because we're talking about Juneteenth on this day, and we're talking about Juneteenth as a day of freedom, as a day of wanting more rights, wanting equality. Let me share this before I drill you in on that. Al Edwards bust his butt for years, almost 30 years working, okay, on behalf of the people as a state legislator. He recently passed away, okay? April 29th is when he passed away, this year, April 29th. And, you know, he was 80 plus years of age, 83 to be honest. So, you know, he lived a good life. He really did. He lived a full life, but who am I to say that he, you know, didn't want to be around longer? But he lived a good life. He lived a full life. And after looking at and thinking about this, there were times when Al, he's been in the hospital, just for you all who don't know, he was kind of in the hospital, in and out, some things had happened. And then he was in a home where they kind of took care of him and looked after him at a like a senior living place almost. And I had the privilege of being able to sit down with him and have some rather big boy conversations with him while he was still coherent and able to give feedback. He was a lively fella, and I was able to go there and eat dinner with him and things like that. And I am so appreciative of that now. I really am. just as early as last year, being able to do some of those things. And just, you know, being able to this is all before COVID-19 happened. And when people could actually go and be people and have a conversation with people, right? But it was a tough thing, man. It was a tough thing to be able to sit there and understanding that he was going through health issues. Because for me, I was facing an individual who I've known as like a hero, who I knew as the Juneteenth guy, Juneteenth USA man. Al would always wear red. Al Edwards, he was known for this, okay? He would always wear red. I don't care how hot it was. He'd have warm-up pants on in the summertime, these red warm-up pants, okay? And this red shirt. If it rained, he'd be wearing red, and we would go indoors and play tennis. But when they did the Emancipation Proclamation, which was, you know, Al's idea of this, I guess, was to bring it to light in the bill and get it sponsored. And they did this in Galveston. Okay. Obviously, you know, the actual proclamation, all that other stuff was back in like 18 something, you know, but you look at the amount of years that have gone by and America had to find a way to acknowledge it. That was the start of something big in Texas, one of the largest states on the country, and biggest pieces of property in the world is Texas. And to think that it took that long to get acknowledged, and even years later, we're still struggling to be able to have these conversations and understand what it meant. And having a tennis background, meeting Al Edwards and knowing Al Edwards through tennis is where I first had a chance to really get to know him. Obviously, my grandmother knew him, and my relatives knew him, but you know, we knew of him. But turns out his office was right around the corner from you know, in the neighborhood, on the outskirts of the neighborhood, and I would just freely go over there, ride my bike, the skateboard, and so on, and had a chance to kind of hang out with Al in his own climate, which was his office, okay, when he was in town, because, you know, otherwise he would be in Austin, Texas, making runs back and forth. But we became good friends, okay, really good friends. And he would call me, and I would look forward to it. Sometimes he would call, I'd call on, like, the cell phone and stuff, and he'd say, "Hey, Judge, you know, I'm coming back. I'm coming back." And I'm like, "Oh, you're coming back?" He's like, "Yep, I'm heading from Austin now. We're going to get on the court? We going to do it?" And I would hear him say those things, and I would just light up and be like, "Yeah, I'm getting my stuff ready now. Al's going to come to the house and pick me up." Okay. I was a young man. I was a teenager, and he would come on by and he would pick me up. And we'd go indoor if it was raining. He was a member at the Chancellor Racquet Club in Houston, Texas. And so that was like my way of getting to play indoor tennis and meet all these other cool people, because, you know, Al was like a celebrity. So he would take me around these other people, and Elmo Wright, you know, former NFL guy, if you look up that historical name, and he's a legend, right? And some other people that would be there, and you hear all these stories from people, stories. And what I learned from Al, just as a quick takeaway, it was, "Jesse, you're going," this is something that he told me, "Jesse, you're going to struggle. You're going to want to fight, and you're going to have to fight, and you're going to have to struggle. It's not going to be easy to get these people on board with something you're doing. You're radical to them. You're new to them, but you have proven success. You and your brother, you guys are awesome. You keep doing what you're doing, and you don't stop, okay? You don't turn from what you're doing. Just keep going." These are the words that he told me, okay? I'm quoting them. And it rings out the whole time. And while we were having dinner, something that he told me, he says, "You know, my Juneteenth tournament Jesse, my Juneteenth tournament. People have been coming here. They're trying to talk to me to host the tournament. And they want me to host that, you know, the tournament. But I want everybody to be a part of the tournament, Jesse. I want everyone. I want whites, blacks, Asians. I want everyone to be a part of the tournament. It's not a black tournament. It was a tournament that gave attention to Juneteenth and allowed everyone with through the sport of tennis to incorporate, to mix, to mingle, to play, to have sportsmanship. And at the end of the day, whether you're white, whether you're black, whether you're the winner, whether you're the loser, you come together and you shake hands. That's what it's about. That's how we do business, in even down there in Austin with the state legislation. You're trying to get something done. You work with them and you go shake hands to get the deal done. Whether things work out in your favor or not, you shake hands. That's the gentleman thing to do. And he says, I want that tournament to keep that same legacy, for people to be able to go and shake those hands. And I was like, I'm just thinking about that now from that conversation, that last conversation I had with him, sitting there having dinner with a guy. And boy, it was heavy for me. It was really heavy. I hope I don't start rambling. I'm trying not to to tear up as I'm talking to you all with this, but because I have him in mind and I see him, I'm sitting at the table with him, and I just sat there, and half most of the time I just listened, and we were just sitting there in peace. You know, he would go in and out, and you know, we ate dinner. They brought the dinner, and we sat there, and it was a wonderful time. And I made sure he got, you know, everything he needed. But now, thinking about the freedom that we have now, and looking at his legacy and the protests that are going on today versus the protests that were going on back then, and how they did it with class, they did it with honor, they did it with real fight, they kept their peace and their mind. That's right, they kept their peace and their mind while they were out there. Think about what it takes for a guy in that era of 1979 to pull this out with all those white people in the state legislation and so on in Texas, and to be able to get them to get on board and agree as a freshman, as a newbie, to get them on board and say, yes, yes, we'll do a paid state holiday for this. Think about that. So when people start yelling so much racism today and say it's racism, everything is not based on racism. Just because the other person is your opponent doesn't mean that in the end, while they are of different race and nationality, it doesn't mean we can't come together and shake hands. Okay? I think we need to have a shake hand moment right now. I know that COVID's out there and everybody is looking for a reason to not shake hands. Everyone is on social media. People are caught up in their feelings quite a bit. But I'm gonna tell you, after looking at what I've seen on TV and watched on TV, we're so quick to blame, and in blaming, we're even faster, okay, even faster to distance ourselves. We've decided to say things like the right side of history, as if it's a wrong side of history, okay? History's history, all right? There are things that are changing right now. There are things that are happening right now that has nothing to do with Juneteenth. Nothing to do with the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, when the enslaved folk were set free. And it was proclaimed, so now we're out and we're gone crazy over silly things like the image of a black lady on a bottle of syrup. Okay, somebody decided to say, well, that's a stereotypical thing. Well, quite frankly, where the the most modern lady is who's on the face of Aunt Jemima syrup. I'm gonna give it to you the way Al would say it. You might want to be grateful that she's on the cover of that, okay? Because a long time ago, we didn't get to make too many covers. So it was something and a big deal, and you were appreciative. When you do your research and find out where that lady is from, you'll realize that everyone in the small town and city that she's from, they love the fact that she's on there because that's the only thing the town and city is known for. Okay, so there's pride in the little things. And for some reason, other people made a big thing out of it and decided they wanted to protest the idea of someone having small grain of progress, which for us in those days and that time looked like just being accepted enough to be on the cover of something, whether that's a magazine that white people pick up or a bottle of syrup. That's progress. Everything is not a big major move. Okay, what's my point? You say, Jesse, what's your point on this? Well, Juneteenth and Emancipation. Emancipation Proclamation. Is there something that we personally can emancipate ourselves from? Is there something, some negative attitude, bad spirit that we are entangled with and tethered to that we can't move from it? All right. I'll tell you a story dealing with Al Edwards. And we were talking about Juneteenth. And he was bringing some things to me because at this time I had already put on professional tennis tournaments and worked with, you know, traveled all around the world. And he came to me, he called me up and he goes, hey Judge, what do you think, you know, can be done? Like, I'm looking at my tournaments and they're charging me all these fees now, not just the USTA, but the city of Houston is charging me all these fees. And I explained a couple things to him of stuff that I was going through with the city of Houston. And I'm using this word emancipation because I think it just fits very well. With tennis, and we're talking to the tennis people. I'm gonna focus on blacks for a second, okay? Generally, blacks that are from distressed areas or the athletic ones that get out there and play quite often and very well, they don't, a lot of them don't have country club memberships. Don't know if you know that, but that's a fact. They just don't come from the country club, all right? Not that we can't be at the country club. Most of them are just not there, and a lot of them can't afford it, okay? But we do have some there. So if you're listening, then you understand where I'm coming from. But there's a thing called haves and have-nots. Just because you have not the funding doesn't mean that you should not have the ability to play tennis and learn the game well, okay? Well, when Al was discussing his Juneteenth Classic tournament with me and the fee structure and everything and what changes might be made, and I moved over into discussing the impact that it has, because Al has always donated money. He's always given something, okay, for youth, always, okay? And he's always supported my tennis players coming up. Always. He's always been there as a voice. He, the same way he did with me. Matter of fact, I want to say he introduced me to the great Calvin Murphy, you know, at one point, who was a tennis player. Calvin Murphy. He's a former basketball player, but, you know, great Calvin. I say the great because he's like a legend and Hall of Famer as a NBA player. Look him up. Little short guy from Houston. He's awesome. Big mouthpiece. Was always on the Rockets game, commentating now. Was an amazing basketball player and played tennis. So all of these people, all my life, we've been around. And I want to set the backdrop for this. The tennis tournament of Juneteenth was at McGregor Park. And I'm going to finish this up with this this conversation, or this subject of the conversation. The Juneteenth tennis tournament was held at McGregor Park in Houston, Texas. Okay, it's known as Home of Ford Tennis Center right now. And it is a Houston Parks and Recreation Park. Currently, we do have a black mayor. Okay, we've had a black mayor before. We've had a gay lesbian mayor. All of that stuff has been done, right? However, we're in a weird situation now, because when you look at the backdrop of McGregor, it is like an historical park. Not only did Jesse Cooper come from there, all right, I was a child of the park, and you had Zena Garrison and Lori McNeil and a ton of other talented young people to come from there. We've had players that I've worked with and some guys that on the tour stop in there just to kind of stop by. Even Taylor Townsend, when she worked out with Zena Garrison, was there. Zena was a player at a time, but then she eventually started coaching and helped out Taylor Townsend for a brief moment. There was some synergy there, and that she would come over to the park at McGregor Park and practice some. Lori McNeil, okay, and if you don't know who Zena Garrison and Lori McNeil are, two top 10 players of the world, one like as high as, I just say they're top five in the world. You look at their record, I would encourage each of you to look up Zena Garrison and Lori McNeil. They are awesome. And my coach, who worked with me, John Wilkerson, coached them. So that was kind of the background. But to set the backdrop, we're talking about public park, historical park. And I won't go into details because I need to move through this to stay focused for a second. The concern that we're having right now by setting this backdrop is those players, they were not a part of a country club. They were part of a public park. Okay, as Bud Collins would report on it and discuss it. The issue with this is their upbringing in the game was done by people, coaches, who gave a damn. Not you have to be certified this and certified that. Not you have to have come through whatever country club and whatever academy standing. It was people who cared. They shared their knowledge. Okay, and everyone at the park would have something to say about you, something to say to you. That's their way of helping the process, you know, and developing players. They would see something and they would say something. That's what it was about. Okay, we can handle our own. Well, now, when you look at the way, and this is for any city, any county, any small town, all right, for what it's worth, the reason Al Edwards was having the conversation with me is because his tournament was being charged a ton of money, and this means he now has to raise the entry fees. Why did he have to raise all those entry fees and make them so high, right? He didn't want to do that. And most people at a country club or a certified pro would say, well, let me show you how it's done. This is what you do. Well, yeah, you're showing me how you all do things so that you can just tax and make money off everybody and pimp out the system. Well, but this Juneteenth tournament was done as a means of a movement and a campaign to spread the word of Juneteenth and allow people to come together from a variety of nationalities all throughout the city, all throughout the state, to come together and shake hands in the end. Well, when you start charging all this money, you then move out a lot of people who can't afford to just keep paying high entry fees, just to pay high entry fees, to lose first round and or get a little cheap trophy or whatever the deal is, okay? This is missing, this area, this part of humanity, to look at the purpose of things. Okay, we're talking about a public park, a public tennis center, all right, which is should be for the people and designed to enable the people. But now we've moved it to a place of policy this, policy that, and those policies were used to then jack up the fees and raise the fees. Those policies were used even to start changing the way people were charged. And in particular, most of this grossly began to happen when a lady by the name of Emily Schaefer came on board. just, I can't say that many great things about her, to be honest with you. I guess you could say in one sense she's great for the Houston Tennis Association. She's great for the Texas section of the USTA, and she has been great for the USTA. Why? Well, part of her purpose was to help grow their business and what they were doing. But that has nothing to do with helping people. Let me go. Can I speak frank for a second? That doesn't have a damn thing to do with helping people in the hood. Because those organizations focus on developing revenue for themselves and membership for themselves. And things like the NJTL, while it presents itself as something great, most of the times, because of the way it's structured, you won't have good teaching, you won't have good coaching, and you certainly won't have those relationships that are going to really take the player from one level to the top, okay? I'm sure those people are good people, but when you have, and if you look at this real quick, look at the program of in the Houston, Texas area and surrounding area, it is a very large program, a vast program, summer and fall and spring program with the NJTL, and it's monopolized by the Houston Tennis Association together with the City of Houston Parks Recreation, okay? And you think, well, man, that's like free tennis. No, it's not free tennis. It's a small window of time to control people and say, hey, this is what we have for you for free. And what is done is enabled, actually, as I had a conversation with Al about this, it has enabled them to further invoke and push their policies of do not teach tennis to people. Okay, so now we have people who want to learn the game, who are willing to use their sweat and their talent to bust their butt and learn the game, who just need to get on the court. And tennis is, when I grew up, okay, and even playing with Al would either pay for the court, and he would make sure the adults over there, especially those working at the park, they all knew me, along with a good friend who was over there and mentor, Leonardo Johns. And so the way we did things is you just allowed those who wanted to play, you let them get on the court. Go ahead and get on the court, babe, is what he'd say. That's how I got into coaching. It's how I got into teaching. Jesse, come on, get on the court. All right. So fast forward years later from my junior years all the way to now, where I get the question from Al Edwards on the backdrop of we're at a historical park. You would think that with Zena Garrison there, Lori McNeil there, and also an awesome guy, a great guy, a man who doesn't get enough praise, and I'm actually working on doing something really big for him. Hopefully we can get this stuff done sooner than later, but his name is John Wilkerson. That was the coach of Zena Garrison, Lori McNeil. He deserves a lot of praise. Sure, other people helped out, but he is the man, okay? He coached them. That's the guy you'll see sitting in the stands at Wimbledon. It's the guy you'll see sitting on the park bench at McGregor Park, okay? And even today, he's still out there trying to help young people, and I love it, okay? But when we look at all of the talent we had, all of the resources we've had, obviously when I say Zena Garrison, Lori McNeil, that taps me into then the names of like Katrina Adams, you know, the former past president of USTA or chairperson. And you begin to now understand that there's a lot of access to cash, access to resources, and Zena Garrison has her tennis academy, but nothing has changed for people who want to use the park and come up in the park. Because now you have to be a part of all these programs in order to really do anything. Okay, so what's my point, you say, Jesse? Well, I'm asking each of you all to, in some version of yourself, look at what you can emancipate yourself from. What can you sever? What can you say, let me let this go. I can do better than this. We can do better than this. Let's move towards the freedom of one thing so that we can move, be light enough to move forward and grow together. But in particular, and the tennis part of that, it's looking at those policies that people like Emily Schaefer will use to stop black kids playing tennis. It would be like, if you're a teaching pro, you can understand this. If you're, you know, in coach or if you're USTA, I want you to hear it this way. At a public facility, it's the equivalent of a public library. And if a young black kid wants to learn, whether you're an uncle, a pastor, or a cool guy in the neighborhood that wants to help them out and teach them how to read, you can take kids to the library and each one teach one. We should be able to do that. To stop that just sounds stupid. It really does. It's like a horrible, atrocious thing. Matter of fact, it's what we're fighting about today, saying, oh no, Black Lives Matter. Oh, hey, we need to do this. No justice, no peace. One of the reasons why people are going crazy is because stupid things like this keep happening, and it prevents us from the basic human acknowledgement of greater good in people. Hey, that guy's doing something for that girl, or that guy's doing something for that little kid over there, that little boy. Let's help them do that. Or he's just teaching an older person how to read. Maybe they've been incarcerated. Whatever. That's how the public library system works. Some people don't need to go to the public library. They just hobble on over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and they do what they got to do. Okay, but everybody can't afford to do that. Some people don't have places to go and community centers to go after school, so that's where they have to go. And that's it's nothing wrong with them being used that way. They have a library card. They filled out the paperwork. You know, should be able to teach and read. They do. That's how it works. Nobody has too many problems with that. But on the public front of the tennis center, you now have young black kids who need to learn the game. And Houston has like gooons of tennis courts. A lot of them are raggedy because people won't use them. And people like Emily Schaefer have supported and made it very difficult for people to clean up those tennis centers and do things. Now, if you're like the U.S. men's clay court, and you're somebody over there, big wig, and you say, let's get these guys like John Isner and some of these guys that don't live in this city, that play on the tour, let's have them come over for a photo op and donate money to fix a dilapidated tennis court, which, bless their heart, those guys know nothing about what's going on. They don't realize that their money is just being wasted because nobody's going to use those courts because they can't. If you don't know how to play the damn game, you have to learn the game. So why would you resurface tennis courts in the middle of the hood when you know you have restrictions on them, okay, where you won't allow people to teach the kid there? That's like putting a library there knowing the kids really don't like to read, but you don't want them to gather at the library, and you don't want some lady or some pastor to go in there at their local church and say, hey, let's do a reading day. Let's come in and do this, and I'll teach you how to read, and we'll practice our vowel sounds and et cetera, et cetera. This is the basic stuff that we're missing at the city of Houston, okay? And if you are a part of a municipality or in another city, Beaumont, Texas, San Antonio, wherever, I don't care if you're in Tennessee, I don't care if you're around Tennis Sangren, I don't care if you're around Donald Young in Atlanta, I don't care who you are, where you are, Noah Rubin, et cetera, et cetera. The rest of you all, I don't care. You're in tennis, you need to be willing to step up and say something. Okay, I have a lot of friends in tennis that play professional tennis. I'm great friends now. They sit back silent. Well, I'm asking all of you all to raise your voice now to this. Black kids, poor kids, Mexican kids, they cannot be taught by their own. They cannot learn the game. And they cannot afford your expensive ass fees of like $50 and so on. As Al Edwards would say, they want to tell you, rack it back, bend your knees, $40, please. Imagine what it would have been when Al Edwards was taking me around and I was still learning the game, and he would give me tips and pointers and say, hey, Judge, more like this. Put more spin on it. Let's just practice hitting cross court. Now, this is a guy who stepped in the role of like a father figure and a mentor. He had a membership and he had a little bit of money. So we went to, obviously, McGregor Park most of the times and practiced there. But the other times, we would be at Chancellor's Racquet Club and we would use the indoor court. And I would hit and we'd do doubles and I'd be able to work on some things and learn some stuff. And he'd say, hey, Judge, I'm taking a break. Here, you want to take all these balls? You can go work on your serve. You know, think of it this way. You know, jump up and hit it a little bit more. Now, what if somebody were to come up to him and say, hey, don't help that kid. You need to be certified or you need to have a permit to teach him, permit to coach. There would be no Jesse Cooper. There would be no Jesse Cooper if the things that are going on today that are enforced today, okay, was enforced back then. And we need to look at some of these, I call them just common sense changes that need to happen. A common sense change that needs to happen is get Emily Schaefer out. A common sense change that needs to happen is change the policy. A common sense change needs to be stop trying to use the public facilities to generate revenue as if the city needs the revenue. They don't. Most of the time, those guys could be displaced or put somewhere else if they're working there, and you just open the courts up. You don't need a staff to be there. Let's be honest. Okay, if you can't afford it, you can't afford it. But if you can't afford it, then keep paying it and allow people to do their thing so that they can help each other, because that's really the heart of it. All right. And now let me just share this part here, because sometimes people want to pimp the system out and take advantage of some of the public spaces and put these big ass academies out there and doing things, whether it's nonprofit and for free, doesn't matter. You're pimping out people's addresses and so on so you can make dollars off grants. We all know how it works. All right. That's the way it is. You're whoring kids out for dollars, hoping that you get 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 of them. Sometimes these people have programs with 100 kids in them, just pimping them. They're not learning tennis. It's too many people out there. Okay. Again, on the backdrop of this, we have huge success coming out this park. You have the Jesse Cooper who became, you know, the promoter, the marketing guy, the guy who represents, you know, major athletes, and then also coaching players in tennis, in the Grand Slams, et cetera, et cetera. But then you have the other kids who looked up to that and used me as a pathway to do what beyond they what they would have had access to, whether it's going to Marquette, whether it's getting into Cal Berkeley, whether it's getting into Sam Houston, Colorado recently, you name it, a long list of tennis players who have received scholarships. Most of these people did not have a ranking, okay? Because it's hard, okay? And this goes back to Al Edwards' thing of wanting to lower the entry fee for his tournaments. It is hard to help those kids if you get them in the game, but they cannot afford and don't have the means to get through the game. USTA, if you're listening. Kent Kinnear, if you're listening. Martin Blackman, if you're listening. Katrina Adams, if you're listening. Let's do something about it. Zena Garrison, if you're listening. Lori McNeil, if you're listening. Let's do something about it. All of the other guys, your Mike Russells and other people who, which what it seems as though if they're generating revenue and they're liked because they're a part of the Houston Tennis Association or they're in, they get to use what's called the White Park. That's Memorial Tennis Center. It's a public park in Houston, Texas. You can go over there and you can use that. They're able to teach over there. Okay. Not trying to call anybody out, but if you see something, you gotta say something. There are kids, so much talent. They can come out. And people know, you know, I've worked with like this one kid now, adult, and I love him. He's like a son, Miles Martin, okay? And to be able to work with a young man and he trusts me and me trust him and take him from homeless to hopelessness to being hopeful on something, that in itself is amazing, okay? To be willing to work with a young man who just wanted to play the game and get better, wanted to try to become the best he could. And sometimes people look at the dynamics of our relationship and they're just baffled. They don't understand it, you know? But I gotta give credit where credit is due right now, because when we think about Juneteenth and this Emancipation, this proclamation, we're free. Free to do what? damn it. Free to do what? See, this is the conversation that I was having with Al, and he talks about being uncomfortable, okay? He talked about being uncomfortable. He says, you're gonna have to struggle. You're gonna be uncomfortable. So one of the things I've always done is I've always given and sown into communities where even while you're being rejected by some, to some degree, by some people in the community, you still have to go. Not to get biblical, but Jesus was rejected in his home place. So eventually, you know, more people received him on the outside rather than the inside. And, you know, as such history shows, and the word says. So I'm okay. I take it on the chin every day because I'm doing it for the right reasons. And I was a person who did not, who had means and did not need certain things. I have a different, a diverse background. So I didn't need to structure a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. But most people don't know, I did. And I had one for several years. Okay, several years. I mean, I think about eight, nine years or whatever, had it. And I started this right outside of my high school years, as I started in college. I decided I would go ahead and I would start this nonprofit. And it was to give back and help because that's the spirit of what I learned from Al and what I learned from people like Al, mentors like Al, like John Wilkerson and so on. And giving back is just a thing that we did. We didn't incorporate and set up a nonprofit status so that we could put ourselves on salary. We did it so that we would be able to receive donations, it benefits someone, and we could get kids to tennis tournaments. So if you're listening to this, USTA, your fees are so god doggone high that people can't play, they're broke. You get people in the game and team tennis is not the game. That's not the way, okay? They need to be able to play tennis tournaments, but they also need to be able to learn the game freely. USTA generally gives funding to a lot of different places, even, you know, grant monies and so on, and even through their small CTAs, community tennis associations. But what doesn't happen, Ted Irk, if you're listening, what doesn't happen is they don't do a good job at accountability to say, when these courts are done, other than our league ladies and league dudes wanting to play on it, how can these other people play? How can we get them through? I mean, because the league people, they can go to a country club. They really can. These are adults. They have a good job now. But what about the kids within like a 5-10 mile radius of this place? How are those guys going to be able to play and use the facility? And when people respond with, well, we have a program from this time to that time they can get in, that means you're trying to put them in a corner, kind of like, well, just go to the back of the bus. All right. The way the proven system, okay, the names in tennis, black tennis, you mentioned Arthur Ashe, you mentioned Arthea Gibson, but then you have to move on quickly to, other than like Leslie Allen and stuff, you have to move on quickly to Zena Garrison and Lori McNeil, okay? You have to remember those times in the semifinals of Grand Slams and the finals of Grand Slams against Navratilova with Zena Garrison and Simmons and so on with Lori McNeil. You have to remember that. They didn't come up and need all of your orchestration and your management. They didn't use that system. They use a different system. A we give a damn about each other system. Okay? We give a damn about each other and we can take care of our own. So we got to watch this authoring and this structuring of over-programming community instead of allowing it to be organic. And that's generally, it produces the best outcome and the best product. I know that's hard for people to swallow sometimes that something so simple can be so effective, but that's what it's about. And there are times I would be out there coaching, and players know I've had, mention his name, Justin Bauer used to go there. Justin made it, you know, maybe, JB, what were you? Jeez, like top 200 in the world, maybe 180, 190, somewhere around there. You had these guys out at public parks, training, busting his butt, jogging and running from the house to the park, playing, running the bayou. Okay, that's what we did. We brought up big buckets and baskets and balls and we got out there and we grind and we bust our butt so that we could come up. That's what it was about. Okay, we brought in players from literally all over the world. Justin Bauer, South African. How does a guy back in those days from South Africa make it into Houston, Texas with a young black guy? White South African from Johannesburg comes in and he gets in with with me. Praise God, it was a good thing. That's a whole nother story, but I'm just showing you the diversity in a modern conversation that we've had there. Okay, young black kids to receive wild cards, hosting professional tournaments as early as a futures level to give wild cards to these young kids, black talent, so that they could play and they could come up and they could do it from the city. Okay, those are the opportunities that we need. We need more of those. And I commend people like the Brian Earlys of the world who supported that cause and helped me out. You know, he did it for his reasons, but I was doing it for my reasons. But it helped, okay? And the BS never got in the way. And we were able to empower so many young people, so many players who never would have had an opportunity, okay? That's what it looks like getting it through. And I said that about the tournaments and the wild cards because at that time, when we talk about emancipation and freedom, since that's the theme of this, and the backdrop is history. This was during the time when Malavar Washington's dad and I'm gonna say the Washingtons, not necessarily Malavar, were suing the USTA. Okay, I was in the tournament director business. All right, while they were suing the USTA, and I've got to ask a lot of questions as a promoter and a director, what I thought. And like I told them, it's about who you akin to and in relationship with. That's who gets those wild cards. Beyond what the USTA offers, the promoter and the host itself had, you know, is given a certain amount of wild cards, which means designation spots you can just give a person to make it. But that's how you get people through. That's how you get people through. And we can try to look at data right now, but your data doesn't show genuineness. Your data doesn't ask the question of why they're doing what they're doing. And some of these things just need to be talked about. And when you discuss them, you can find that when you bring them up and you put these type of people in charge and or ahead of the committees and the panels and the groups, that's when this level, this subject matter permeates and really does penetrate the hearts and minds of people as a better way to do things. Okay, emancipate us from those policies that keep us from and prohibit us from being able to teach our own. Emancipate us from those policies, Sheila Jackson Lee, that, you know, I mentioned that she's Congress to most people, but she used to be a city council member, a local focal, okay? Emancipate us from all of those things that anchor the park down and tie it up into the BS bureaucracy that stops everything from flowing. One day there was an opportunity and an opening to be the manager. And everybody kept saying, Jesse, are you going to take this? You're going to take this position at McGregor Park? Nope, not want to do that. I offered something different. I said, hey, I have a fella, a friend, we can give, you know, and a couple other people a minimum of $100,000. We'll change some things up. They turned it down. Begged for meetings, they turned it down. Eventually, Houston Tennis Association gets in. Well, and we all understand why that happened. They're positioned well to be able to get things so that they can do what they're trying to do. There's now currently a fella there, the manager, I think he's Roger something, White or something like that. Not good guy. He tells people crazy stuff like, well, you know, we had to change up some of the stuff that we were doing and the way we're doing it. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're Emily Schaefer's like pal, buddy. Y'all used to coach together. All right. And now all of a sudden she calls you up, puts you over to be the eyes and ears. And as recent as last week, I got a phone call from someone complaining, saying they heard about these things. And this is what the manager there, Roger, had to say to them. I was like, what? It doesn't generate enough money. I'm like, it's not a country club. So I say this to the USTA because I know the USPTA and all these people, they have these courses where they teach people and they try to teach you country clubism. But there's no one really teaching people to have this empathy and understanding for public facilities, to understand their consumer, who they serve, which are the citizens, the people, and people who will not be able to afford to pay things as if they're at a country club, and you're trying to have things at a run rate that is so high because you've come in to try to generate revenue on something that the taxes are going to pay for anyway. And the parks are just an amenity of the taxpayers. That's all it is. It's just an amenity for them. It is not, it's like a cool amenity. If you're at a hotel, you pay for the room. You don't pay to use the dang tennis court. You don't pay to use the gym there. It's just an amenity. Here, this comes with it. Okay, if you're a citizen of that city, you should be able to use it. So without rambling, I got to give credit where credit is due. There are people out there like the Donald Youngs of the world, and him in particular, who have sown into people. And I'm saying his name very briefly here, but who've been burned quite a bit, okay? Not going into his business, but hell, he's been burned. You know, his mama's been burned, daddy's been burned. And it hurts because you're trying to do things for people and get them through. I've been burned, okay, by a lot of different people. And you're trying to get people through, but no matter what, I commend them because I think for what it's worth, they always, in the end, they end up doing the right thing. They end up trying it again and helping people out. And I thank them publicly right now on this podcast for their trust and their support, whatever that looked like for myself and even for Miles. I thank them for that because there are people that we grew up with in a historical city for tennis, not just for the part I told y'all, but if I really told you the truth, in Houston, they formed the Women's Tennis Association. The tour was formed also in Houston, Texas, at another location, but in Houston, Texas, you know. So it's a lot of history in Houston. But being here and knowing these people, growing up with these people, seeing these people today, and they have not stepped up to do much. I'm asking all of you all, in your own version, your own way, pass the damn torch to other people. Let them see the light so that they can find their pathway. Just, you don't have to even give them your torch. Just tilt it over, light theirs up so they can see the way, they can find their way out. Because Juneteenth, while the people who were enslaved got free, we let them out to have what? You freed them to go do what? So, hell, you're behind, way behind the start line. You have shackles on your feet. You're running a race that is no way, in theory, you can win. And even now today, the same old crap goes on with the people like at City Houston Parks Recreation, and we have a black mayor. We had a gay mayor before that. Okay? I mean, heck, man, what's the deal? And let me tell you this. I mentioned we have a gay mayor, a lesbian, whatever you want to call the acronym, but Mayor Anise Parker was awesome. She stood up. A couple times I had to go to her, she stood up for something. So I gotta give her credit, all right? Mel Turner, come on, brother. It's time for you to step up as well. You can't just give it to your friends, people that you've been around. And I'm saying this, I'm okay with white people hearing this, the black community generally has a problem with passing the torch. When we grow up with somebody, we like to stick with them. And the old heads just circulate things around to each other. We have to stop that in order to move forward and grow. We need to emancipate ourselves from that thinking. There needs to be a proclamation from that dumb thinking. If not, there won't be much of a future for the others to come to grow into. It's not that I had people go full rides at major universities they would have never got into without tennis. It's not that we've had some of those great coaches come out there, college coaches come out there. This is more about when they didn't have a dime. I use what we've always used in the Black community for the most part, which is called a ministry model. Okay? I said, hey, if there's an opening, sit on the pew, pop a squat, and get a good word. When I'm teaching, I'm giving out the knowledge, take it and run with it. I didn't have to scholarship you in. I don't need to get you to fill out a ton of paperwork. I'm jessecooper.com. I'm online. We had Parks to Pros at the time. Come on with it. Get there. We're going to take you from here to there. That's the heart of the program. And the mission is to see people grow pros, which means put something, give you something on the inside, okay, in your within your mindset to help you grow. Provide whatever resources we have, and then the rest of the resources we'll go out and get if we don't have those, meaning whatever else you need. And we'll find a way to do it. We'll bridge the chasm, but we do it together. That's what it's always been about. Okay? Now, that's not too glorifying on the spreadsheet. It doesn't make too much money, but that's okay. I was blessed and I was in a situation where I could get away with doing that. Most people can't do that, okay? And this is why I think we have to watch who we ask to go be the teachers and the coaches and the mentors for people, because they need to do it for the right reason. Now people are charging to be a mentor. They're charging to be, they're charging to do things that they used to do because they gave a damn. So we need to watch that and make sure that we're doing it at the right out of the right reason, because people are paying for knowledge and they're becoming smarter, but there is no real struggle to get it, because the people who are really willing to struggle with you while you go through it, through the entire process, are not there. You just have people who are transactional based people. Rack your back, bend your knees, $40 please. Hey, we have a program. It starts at this time, it ends at this time. I did my time, I clocked in, I clocked out. That's what these programs have produced. That type of thinking, that type of coach, more importantly, that type of person. But then you have a guy like me who will say, psh, be out here all day, and when I'm done, I'll carry you home. And when your mother or your father don't understand, or your daddy who's in jail is not there and you need somebody to talk to, give me a call. I'll get in my car, I'll go over there and I'll talk to him, and we'll sit down and we'll, it don't matter what time it is at night, because that's what it takes to get you from one side to the other, and I'm in it to win it. Emancipate from those policies that restrict us. Take the shackles off of us. That's what Juneteenth was supposed to be about, okay? Take the shackles off so I can properly shake your hand, baby. Take them off. Don't arrest our development. Don't arrest our development. Sure. Some of the things I'm saying may not be the most conventional way of doing things because you haven't heard about it. But what I can tell you is we have 2 top 10 players in the world. And we did it our way. We have people who have become promoters, fitness trainers, own multi-million-dollar facilities, doctors. I'm proud to say we got Cornell. I didn't mention that. I said Cal Berkeley earlier. Let me add that. We had Cornell. We have dentists, doctors, lawyers, you name it. Man, that came out of that. That's the Jesse Cooper effect. Okay? Not, hey, man, how much you have? How much money are you going to pay? Well, this is what it costs. Take that crap to Florida. Do that somewhere else. Do all of that at your big country clubs. Leave the parks alone. Don't screw that up. Because Black folk that can't afford it, they need to discover it. Okay? They really do need an abstract and even an organic pathway so that they can be received as they come, not judged before they get there. And not told that they can't do things and play the game because they need this, they need that, and they have to do it a certain way. Come on, we have to stop that. So I'm asking those who want to be in charge, who think they're in charge, prescribe a better pathway, a common sense way. That's the real antidote. I'm asking those who have a good record as a former player, those who are currently professional tennis players, to speak up and say something. We have to, just for your own sport, within your community, call Parks and Recreation and find out what the rules are. Find out if there's a way that you can just speak common sense to them and say, hey, by the way, if a person doesn't have any money and they participate in this program, what do they get to do after that? And who's going to take it from there? And it can't be about keeping people within the program, because that's just keeping somebody on welfare so that you can make money off those grants and be able to show, like, ooh, look at our successful program. We have so many people in our NJTL. Well, it's supposed to be a starter program. When do the next levels come into play, baby? It doesn't make any sense. You know, and I've had access to the biggest names on the planet. I mean, not just the Adrian Petersons, the Quentin Coriots, Robert Ory's, the biggest names on the planet. And I've been able to put these youth in front of it, in front of them. I've tech people, software development people, multi-million dollar companies, people that started off literally in their mother's bed, in their room, in their mother's house, and came from nothing to something. That's what... proven system, proven. And anyone who wants to have, you know, proper dialogue with me, I'd love to share some of that. I'm sure they'd love to to step up and say something, but that's what we need. So I'm making a call. This Juneteenth is about a call for the rest of this year. It's a call to action, asking each of you listening to this, do something for me. Check on your local policies and find out, is there anything that's prohibiting progress? What can change? Don't ask what can change. Look at what needs to change. That's how you ask yourself the question, what can change? Then say, that needs to change. And be the one to change it. If you know that somebody's getting screwed over or they're there, don't just know about it and keep it to yourself. Speak up and say something about it. Be nosy enough to give a darn. Juneteenth was about that Emancipation Proclamation. We need to emancipate ourselves from bad thinking. We need to understand that when those people were freed, that they went into a situation where they didn't have as much. I'm not going to tell you that this is systemic racism. I don't believe in a lot of that stuff. I believe in it's a very specific individual who is making bad decisions. We need to get out. There is a very specific individual oftentimes tied to that decision that is made, empowering the bad things to happen. And for what it's worth, let's stop looking at the president and start looking around the corner from your house. Stop looking at the president and start looking at 10 miles radius from where you live. Because the president doesn't live in your city. He's not around you. He don't make those decisions. But you have the ability to make decisions, and it's not just voting that matters. You actually have to advocate and be proactive. I don't want you to go shout in the streets. That's a waste of time. I need you to protest like Al Edwards did. I need you to take action like Al Edwards did. I need the bill to happen. If you're a politician, I need you to author it. I need you to sponsor the bill. I don't need you to stand up and speak and go stand in the hot sun for no good reason, yelling out loud, walking down a perfectly bare street, making a bunch of noise. What I need you to do is step up for an individual that you see and that you know, that you've heard about. Not somebody that you've never met, not somebody's way over somewhere else, talking about, oh, he's dead, he's gone now. I want you to work hard for the living. Don't take slogans, okay, and try to make it your pathway. Take real action. Get the phone number of your city council member. Get the information from your Parks and Recreation. Go there and ask questions to real people. Can I do this? Can I do that? Why not? Why not? Why not? That's where it starts. Not this crazy stuff. And don't go blast people just because you don't understand people on social media. Don't do that. We have to work together. When you're done saying what you have to say, still be willing to shake their hand. My time is up. This Juneteenth podcast is done in memory and in honor of Al Edwards, the guy who proposed the bill for a state holiday as Juneteenth, state paid holiday as Juneteenth, and the same guy who hosted the tennis tournaments as part of that movement and campaign and say, hey, why do my entry fees have to go up? Why are the court fees now being charged more? It's not a country club. Of all people, I know how it works. I'm a state legislator. What's the problem? That's who this podcast is committed to. But I'd be lying and not doing a good service if I didn't say this is also done for the young kids, the black kids that you don't know, who supposedly have a freedom that they cannot use because their lives and inequality, their lives a problem. And now that you know about it, it's up to you to do something about it. Because if you know better, you ought to be able to do better. And I'm asking you to join me in that fight. Mayor of Houston, mayor of any city that's listening, parks and recreation directors all over. I'm asking you, if you're in Beaumont, join me. I'm looking forward to doing big things. Matter of fact, I've already got Beaumont to commit to hosting a Juneteenth tournament that I'm going to go in and help sponsor and organize for him for next year. That's right. And we're going to continue that. It's going to go on and on. All right. I'm asking you all, since you know better, to do better. If you're a professional tennis player, step up. Okay? If you've been stepping up, keep stepping up. Sometimes having conversations with people is the best way forward. Sometimes we just have to talk, and sometimes we got to listen. But you have to be proactive and say, hey, can we have a conversation? Can we get on the mic? Stop worrying about how they used to do things, how it's done. Don't worry about the old way. Let's focus on the best way possible and move forward together. Because all I want to do ultimately with this podcast is one day walk up to you and be able to shake your hand. I'm Jesse Cooper. My time is up. Thank you. For every player, boy, girl, man or woman, the athlete, we pride ourselves on winning inside the lines, together with JesseCooper.com.